On today's episode of The Good Word, Monica McNutt joins us to discuss the greatness and legacy of Dawn Staley. She's got takes on Caitlin Clark. What's wrong with the Milwaukee Bucks? And of course, we go deep on Monica's New York Knicks. All that and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Monday, which means we get Monica McNutt today. If there was a Hall of Fame for Good Word guests, Monica would be on the Mount Rushmore. You guys remember her from the Love Doctor podcast where she was dropping all the gems. Like, Monica, I don't even think you know this. My mother, who doesn't listen to my podcast or whatever, she was like, hey, Monica ain't taking nobody's shit. I was like, that is absolutely the get down on all of this. So Monica McNutt from ESPN, of course, and don't forget she does pre and post games for MSG. She's also been the analyst standing next to Mike Breen. So how has that been? Have you been when you've been filling in for Clyde?
Man, okay, first of all, shout out to Mama Goodwill. I appreciate that. I'm glad that read that way because you could be very kind and hold your boundaries very strong. Anyway. we're not going back to the Love Doctor episode right now.
And you cannot take too. So there's both of that.
Listen, come on now. Two things can exist in one world. Okay, so this season, radio has been so much fun, Vinny. Like, I probably have more fun than I'm supposed to on radio. But having the opportunity to jump in on the TV broadcast during the West Coast road trip. By the way, the Knicks go 3-1 in my debut. You know, just give them a little good luck. Two games with Mike Breen, two games with Kenny Albert. It was surreal. Like, we had a blast. They are both very different play-by-play guys, but we had a lot of fun. In Golden State, Deuce McBride earned a bang, and I remember being like, wait, I'm sitting next to him when he just did that. Like, this is – what do I do now? Like, make a wish. What are the lottery numbers? Like, what's happening? So that was a super surreal moment. So it's good. I'm really excited. I'm so grateful. I'm having a blast with the Knicks. Knicks fans hold me down. MSG Networks has a plan in terms of my future, and hopefully we continue to work together until, until. Let's leave it there.
That's what we do. Until that day comes, we just right. Work. Nah, that's all it is. I get it. That's a life philosophy on a bunch of different levels. I wanted Monica on because for a number of reasons. A, because she's Monica. B, we want to talk Knicks. C, me and Monica were texting on Friday night, I wish it was like one big group chat because I'm sure all these people know each other. Yeah. But it was all these separate texts in the aftermath of the offensive foul that was clearly an offensive foul, but it should not have been called. Because Monica, if you don't remember, Monica, this is jab step, Monica. Jab step, right step, trigger. All Big Ten. Oh, we said all Big Ten. They didn't get no Big Ten. Monica went to Georgetown, all Big East.
Come on now.
I'm in Big Ten country. My bad. I'm in Big Ten country. Monica's all Big East. She has a trigger for a jumper. That's why I said jab step, pull. So, Monica, before we get to yesterday's national championship game between South Carolina and Iowa, let's go to Friday night, UConn, Iowa. The last few seconds of that game. I feel like the ending, we deserved a better ending, even if technically the call was the correct call.
Wholeheartedly. I'm also going to take this time to go on a rant because I'm sick of some things. But, okay, UConn, Iowa. So the Knicks were in Chicago. Shout out to everybody that gathered in the press room and we watched the fourth quarter of that ball game. And we're watching it on mute, right? And so I'm like, what happened? Because I did not see an illegal screen. I'm like, what happened? That is like illegal screen. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you cannot call that in that moment. I know you said it was the right call. I disagree. I don't think that it was the right call. I don't think it was necessary. I hate. That's two times in a row when the eyes have been the brightest, literally tens of millions of eyeballs on these tournaments, two consecutive years. It is marred by officiating. Now, Last year, the NCAA actually had to put out a statement the officiating was so bad.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
year, that is not going to happen because technically there's a group that agrees with you, whatever. But golly, you cannot rob those women of that moment, of that opportunity, make or miss. Oh, I hate that that's where we are and that's what will stand out from that game.
Well, the only reason I said it was an offensive foul was because you know how those plays in particular, not to go super deep into the basketball minutiae of it, but since you're here, we can. Those plays are such about rhythm and timing because you're going to set a screen and someone's coming around. So you've got to have the right spacing and the screener has to be set. Like I'm always a proponent of if it's a moving screen, it's usually the fault of the, not the screener, but the person who's coming around.
Trying to get the screen, right.
Trying to get it and you're coming too fast. I couldn't tell on that one. It just felt like she was a little bit wide, but I don't think there was any extra advantage gained. So if you're saying there was no advantage gained, you let that play on. I have no argument against that.
I'm with you on the no advantage game. I also think we get a little ponytail privilege. Cause what? Cause what?
A little flopping, a little flopping.
Come on now. I hated that call and I will hate that call to the day I die. And I don't care who wants to at me about it. Listen, this tournament at large, though, Vinny, has been so beautiful, so spectacular. I have such tremendous respect for Dawn Staley. For her to shout out Caitlin Clark in her post game, for her to continue to shout out our colleagues that held it down in the studio this year. I love where the game is. I will say this, it's not even an undercurrent anymore, but the racist, politicized ridiculousness, oof. I'm over it. Like, oof. Everybody shut up. I'm over it. Like, Caitlin Clark is great. I can have a conversation about her not being the GOAT. It has nothing to do with the fact that she's a white woman. Like, everybody shut up. And all the new fans, like, I love it. Welcome. But y'all need to sit down and do some research. Like, settle down. Just settle down.
You know what it is, Monica? Women's basketball has made it. Because it is now subject to some of the inane dumbassery that all the other
seriously.
Major sports has hit. Like, we've welcomed in all of, I won't say the new people, we've welcomed in all of the people who've been on the outside, and they bring their nonsense with them that has infiltrated sports. You
seriously.
See it.
Seriously. I accepted a collaboration on a reel from Get Up the other day. Where Rebecca Lobo, the sound prior to it, Rebecca Lobo is saying that Caitlin Clark doesn't need to just win one to be a GOAT. She needs to win multiple. And historically in the women's game, we had the UConns, the Tennessees, the Baylors, if you will, these historically excellent institutions for women's basketball that ran the table, which spoke to the lack of parity.
Right.
In the last 5 years, we've had five different women's champions. The last time that happened was 92 through 96. So the parity is growing. So for me, if Caitlin were able to pull it off, that would have given her the single best year in my mind, and it would have been a GOAT qualifier. But ultimately, when you have a GOAT conversation, you talk about putting these people one-on-one. At least I am, right? You're talking about asking these people to play both sides of the basketball. I can have a basketball conversation, and it has nothing to do with race. Now, to your point, Vinny, part of me is like, okay, this is sport. And it has been happening on the men's side for decades. So welcome abroad. But I will be honest, it has been an uneasy feeling for me and a lot of my colleagues, those of us that have been true to women's basketball and not new to it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a space that we were so protective of, a space that we pushed to have moments to talk about on SportsCenter, let alone a First Take or a Get Up. It was a space where we had relationships with our colleagues that go on to be coaches, that went on to be professional players. It was a space that we were so protective of. And so the vitriol, quite honestly, has really, really had me off kilter a little bit. Like, ultimately, you can flush it and you go with what you said. It's part of the growth of the game. But it's nasty. And I'm like, yo, what is happening right now? Like, can we just make this a conversation about basketball? So I'm over that. And I'm dealing with it as a media member. So when Angel Reese says that she's dealt with a lot in her press game and her post game conference after that loss, I 100% believe her and know that she can play the role of a villain on the court, but also be able to be a human and a young woman that is growing up in the spotlight in a way that she didn't necessarily anticipate and have feelings about it. Two things can totally exist.
Yes. And I think the thing that we don't get about the quote unquote villain role or whatever it is, she's 21. A, most 21-year-olds are going to be obnoxious because have you seen 21-year-olds? Mm-hmm. And B, 21-year-olds are addicted to social media in a way that, even though Monica's a little bit younger than me, we didn't have...
Yeah, no facts.
We didn't have a world with where we didn't know how to operate without social media. So we can easily operate without it. We can turn the phone off. We can turn the computer off. These kids don't know how to do that. So it's everything is serious. Everything is in sort of this sort of insular world. Now, you brought up something, Monica, and I didn't even think about it and put it in the rundown, but you brought it up, so I'm curious about it. Where is the line between advocating for women's basketball in this space while also being a critic and a media member?
I don't think that there is a line for me.
Okay. No, yeah.
If I'm shooting my producers an email or insert SportsCenter host here, hey, like, we got this going on in women's basketball, it should be discussed. That does not mean I'm about to get up there and be like, everybody's great and yay, like, woo, go girls. I'm going to be like, South Carolina needs to do X to win. Iowa needs to do X to win. This has been so-and-so's Achilles heel. Like, I can discuss it from a critical lens and do my job as an analyst be like, yo, y'all should carve out some time for this.
No, it's funny. I think it's, like you said, it's about attention.
Right.
And shining a light on it. And from a writing standpoint, people have said to me, well, are you advocating for Black coaches? There was a couple years ago when the numbers were really, really low. And I wrote about it and highlighted it. And some of my colleagues on every side of the aisle, so to speak, said, are you talking about it or are you advocating? And I said, If I weren't black, would you say I was advocating for it? Or would you just say that I was highlighting the fact that there aren't Black coaches? I just happen to be Black. So it is something that appears to you that is going to be near and dear to my heart, so to speak.
First of all, I would have told them to shut up because you're a senior writer. a senior writer? That's like a half a step from a columnist. Of course, what you write comes through your lens. Are you listening? Do you think that the piece has truth to it? Do you think Black coaches need to be advocated for? Then there's your answer.
This is why I love Monica McNutt, y'all. Because Monica comes on here and she's just like bringing it. Now, the other part about this, first, we need to give, because I don't want to turn this into just Caitlin Clark podcast. The fact that South Carolina replaced all of their starters last year, lost them all to the W. I think they lost was it six to the W or was it five?
The Freshies. I don't quote me. I want to say it was five of them.
Okay. The fact that
I think
they were undefeated last year, lost all five starters, came back this year, undefeated again. We can really put Dawn Staley in the context of Geno and in the late Pat Summitt because of what she's done three of the last 7 years. You mentioned parity in women's college basketball. If there isn't parity, it's because Dawn Staley is like hoarding some of these trophies. Like, this is 3 and 7 years. This is something really remarkable for her and her all around basketball resume.
This is another one. Like, shout out to all the new eyeballs in women's sports. But like, if you think Dawn Staley is just a coach, you need to run it back. You need to go watch the episode of Martin. Like, Dawn Staley and Team USA giving Martin and his boys the business. She's a basketball lifer, right? And we can have conversations about coaches that are excellent, praiseworthy, have won. But when you have conversations about basketball lifers, people that did it, competed at every level, won at every level, and then go on to coach, like, we're now talking about the upper crust of the upper echelon. Off the top of my head, like, currently in women's sports, I think of Kim Mulkey and I think of Dawn Staley, right? And so that is such rarefied air. I'd have to sit and be a little bit more deliberate on the men's side. I mean, I guess we can look at Hurley, who didn't have as great a professional career, but like did win. But that is rarefied air. And so I think for me, what makes Dawn's success extra sweet is that she does it her way. She shows up as a Black woman who loves her players, who loves this sports, who wants to hold media members accountable, media, and not just members in terms of individuals, but networks accountable. She said candidly to us last year, look, ESPN is cool, but we need more people fighting for the women's tournament. That's when the price goes up, right?
Right, right.
And she's absolutely right about that. So I just think she is class and grace personified. I mentioned earlier as we were discussing, I think her shout out to Caitlin Clark in the midst of celebrating her championship is so important. And that embodies the sentiment of so many of us. I have no issue with Caitlin Clark. I think she's amazing. I shared an earpiece with her last year at the Final Four. But I can still talk about this game constructively. And I can still acknowledge that there were so many women before her that laid this foundation. Now, shout out to this generation because they are coming in rock stars, knocking down shots when the eyeballs and the interest has been the biggest. And that is a kudos to their work. But they did not just pop up and make women's basketball.
Yeah. I mean, look, not to go on a tangent here, but I don't think y'all get it. And I'm going into the Wayback Machine. Cheryl Miller had a Hall of Fame basketball player in her house, and she was giving him the beats every day. Mm-hmm. We kind of need to slow down. And secondarily, if Juju Watkins stays 4 years
in college, you talk about these records.
These records, hey.
Come tumbling down. Come on.
I wonder how people are going to feel when Juju Watkins starts tearing down some of these newly built institutions. I will be very, she's got a sophisticated game.
Come on.
That is a sophisticated game there. Like, if you haven't seen her play, or if you've only seen her play through the lens of the tournament, like Monica said, welcome. But hey, she's coming, or she's here.
Yeah.
And in other news, Purdue's playing UConn in the men's championship game tonight. Go check that out.
Big man, Edie and Klingon. Yeah.
It was just like John put it, like as a note at the bottom of it. Like, we got all this stuff about the women's game. Purdue's playing UConn in the men's game tonight. That's cute. But Monica, before we talk Knicks, like, we're entering the last week of the regular season. And this is like Adam Silver's total dream. Like, if David Stern wanted the dynasties, Adam Silver wants the NFL-like parity. And you've got so many teams in that 42 to 47 win range. We got a big game coming up. I think it's tomorrow. Lakers and Warriors, where LeBron sat last night with flu-like symptoms. And he was tweeting about the women's game with the flu. And then Steph sat last night. Just an interesting sort of thing that we like to point out here on The Good Word sometimes, Monica. But I want to point out the Clips and the Cavs, because the Cavs could wind up facing the Knicks again in another first round matchup that I don't think necessarily either team really wants. Paul George was 23 in the fourth quarter, hit the game winner over Evan Mobley, mate. And I've been the king of Evan Mobley hive over here. And I'm starting to begin. Maybe I should sell some of my stock because he's more slim Duncan than Tim Duncan. I thought he was going to put on some weight. He has not. But how do you view Cleveland so far? Because Donovan has not looked like himself since coming back. Darius Garland, they're a different team than last year, but it's still a lot of skinny dudes and a few more thicker dudes. Is that the best way to put it?
I'm giggling at the way you put it, though, but it's a great way to put it. So there's an impact that last year's playoff series made on the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I know I was there for ESPN earlier in the season and the Knicks series came up. I've been there with the Knicks and the Knicks series comes up in terms of the physicality and the predictability, or the lack of physicality and the predictability of their offense last year in that postseason run. I don't know what to make of this team if Donovan Mitchell is not healthy. That's where I'm a little bit stuck.
I know what to make of them. They're going home. And quickly.
That's probably the answer. But even in terms of the execution, I think Isaac Okoro has had a solid year. Darius Garland, to me, is... And listen, I work for the Knicks. What am I to say about a ball-dominant guard, right? Like, that's what Jalen Brunson has to be for this team. But there's a different motor between Darius, in my mind, and Donovan when you look at the two of them. And then the backside, as formidable as Jared Allen is, to me, Evan Mobley kind of comes in waves. When he runs up against a big that has the size, like you said, a Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein, I don't know that he looks to exploit his quickness the way that you might expect I think he gets a little bit stunted by the physicality. I know that this team in December, when they were on that run, while they had injuries, they wanted to play fast. There was a lot of praise around Donovan Mitchell and even a little bit of buzz internally about him playing like an MVP because his assists were up. He was efficient. He had such a great command of this team. They were really pumped about the addition of Max Strus too, which to me is probably underrated in terms of moves this offseason, because I think Max Strus is a guy with that stuff. Like, he's got the grit of it all. But then it just comes down to personnel in totality. And I just don't trust the overall makeup if Donovan Mitchell is not available.
Look, this is the thing that gets me about Cleveland. They had that 18-1 stretch.
Yep.
Post December. Or around that 18-1 stretch, they're a below 500 team. And all the pieces matter, all the games matter, so you can't isolate one thing. But they're minus 500 team outside of that.
But then, do you think that that is as much about them and the Eastern Conference? Because it's tight. It's tight. The Knicks are flirting with a 500 team without OG Anunoby and Julius Randle in that last month.
Hey, we're gonna get to some of those numbers with OG Anunoby when we talk about the Knicks. Because baby, if they got a chance, they got a chance because it's him. But I think that 18-1 stretch, it was they played a lot more conventional because Mobley was out during that too. So you played one traditional big on the floor. You, like you said, you brought out Strus. You played, what's the kid's name? Georges Niang. You played him a lot. So you had the floor spread. You had one big. You had Donovan Abel. And like you said, you're playing faster now because you've got two bigs and two small guards. The composition makes you play a lot different. And Garland is not a Donovan Mitchell with the ball. He's not even a physical force. Like you talked about Jalen Brunson. Jalen can give you his shoulder and and you're going to bounce off of that shoulder. Darius Garland ain't giving you no shoulder. And hopefully there's the space. You know what I mean? So it's a weird, but yeah, it's a weird Eastern Conference. It's a weird season. Like, I'm hoping for a compelling Eastern Conference playoffs, but my black behind is going to be out West. like this is, I will be in a different time zone. I don't come back East until the finals, unless the bosses just say, hey, you come back East because it's something more compelling here. But speaking of the East, Monica last night was in Milwaukee where the Knicks had to come from behind victory over the Bucks. We're going to talk about the Knicks on the back end, but let's talk about the Knicks right now. Because, baby, the Bucks now with Doc Rivers, they're minus 500 team. And I don't think this is a referendum on they should have not fired Adrian Griffin. I think that move probably should have been done. I wonder, Monica, if this team is broken. Like, just with the pieces that they have or old. You know what I mean? Like, it's Dame a year too late behind it. Brooke Lopez is older now. Giannis is not that completely 48-minute destructive force that you have to worry about. Like, that's the thing with Giannis. It's not the skill. It is the force that he plays with all the time. And if he's 95% of that, that changes the math for the Bucks, and I think we're starting to see a little bit of that right now.
It's Drew Holiday, bro. Like, it's Drew Holiday. I just think that moving on from him changed this roster in ways that they could not have foreseen or anticipated. I have no issue with Adrian Griffin. You are excited to see a black head coach finally get an opportunity. But bringing in a first-year head coach to a situation that's win now, I don't know if I love that from the jump, right? And there has to be a command about all these guys. You pull up in a locker room, first of all, with any NBA player, you have to have a command and a presence that just walk in a room, respect, right?
Yep.
You pull up in a locker room with NBA All-Stars and all NBA players, they're not playing with you. Like, and from the jump, shout out to our boy Jamal Collier, who covers the Bucks and the Bulls for ESPN. Jamal was always looking at me with a funny face when it came to that hire. I'm like, what's going on in that locker room? Just can't put a word on it, but it's the funny face, right? All right, so you move on. To my thing with the Bucks has been, it takes time. Vinny, I don't know why we do this. The only team that was Ad Star, Ad Water Championship, year one, Kawhi Leonard, crazy bounce to beat the Sixers, injuries for the Warriors. Yep. Like, who knows what happens if that bounces? Well, if that bounce isn't there, they're probably out of there. And we're talking about Philly differently, right? If the Warriors aren't hurt, I don't know if that series goes down. What was that, six games? It doesn't go. It's at least probably a full-on series.
Right.
And so there is talent, there's luck, there's timing, there's all of these things. And I'm with you. Shout out to The Good Word with Goodwill because, you know, I'm a loyal listener. Early WNBA season, I was on the Stairmaster in Vegas calling Aces games, and you did the breakdown of guys and their age in this league. And yes, LeBron James is doing masterful things and leading the way in terms of the conversation of true vets. But like, Giannis not young, Lopez not young, Dame not young, and the league, meanwhile, is getting younger.
Monica?
Sir.
I'm going to tell you this. Yeah, go ahead.
But just to put a bow on last night, though, I was pissed at halftime. I wanted to go to sleep. I thought the Knicks were playing scared. Like, I was pissed. I was like, what are they doing? I'm ready to go to bed. Like, this hour is messing me up. Like, I need to go back to the East Coast. And in the second half, this will go under the radar nationally or in the conversation of this, but Deuce McBride, to me, plays the most meaningful 17 minutes of that ball game because outside of Jalen Brunson, he was the only other guy in the second half that was like, all right, I'm not scared. Finally, somebody attacks the paint. If you get a shot block, cool. But let's make the adjustments accordingly, right? And so he was part of turning the tide in terms of Knicks being a little bit more aggressive. So just from a basketball standpoint, what had been working in the first half was Giannis was a monster in the paint. I don't know why they went away from that. The Bucks had done a better job of holding on to the basketball. Credit the Knicks defense for being a little bit more physical and a little bit intense. But they started flinging the ball everywhere. Like, to me, if Giannis is the guy, which pregame Doc Rivers talked about Giannis being maybe second to LeBron in terms of a guy that off of a miss is a force speeding down court, why y'all going away from him? What's happening? Like, this just doesn't make sense. And so, non-basketball, watching that game, one team had that stuff about them. As the Knicks continue to say, and Jalen Brunson says, you find a way. You saw one team finding a way and another team wilting when they got popped in the mouth.
That's the thing for me is the Bucks, or not just the Bucks, but most teams, when plan A doesn't work, where's your counter? And that's, to me, what the playoffs are all about. And I say this all the time. I'm going to say it till I'm blue in the face. By the time game three comes around, the playoff series between two reasonably matched teams, I know what you're running. You know what I'm running. At that point, it don't come down to coaching as much as it does. Comes down to players and what is your counter and what is your mindset going to be. Now, for the Bucks, it's important to remember, since they won that championship in 2021, they have won a grand total of one playoff series.
I knew that, but that's crazy to hear you say that.
One playoff series. They've lost four in a row. They're still holding on to two. They're holding on to two, like the, ooh, that was going to be something bad. I was about to say something really, really bad, but I'm not going to say it. They're holding on
text
to two.
Text me later.
Yeah, I would text you. Trust me. It is a Monica McNutt special. Trust me. They are holding on to two. Okay. And you've got Cleveland who can still get to two. Orlando can get to two. New York can get to two. Like, the door is open. And I don't know if anybody wants to actually play Philadelphia in the first round if it comes down to a healthy Joel Embiid and then Philly gets a seven. I don't know if I would want to do that, but considering Joel Embiid's playoff movies and considering the fact that we are in this new age of officiating, like, it's a little bit different. But, Monica, I have real concerns. The one thing I will say, you brought the Kawhi Leonard point. The other team before that to just add water and to get a championship, the 2008 Boston Celtics, coached by Doc Rivers. And I think that's what the Bucks front office was believing. Oh, well, Doc knows how to bring those guys in and do it quickly. The problem is 2008 was a long time ago, baby. I had a Paul George hairline in 2008. This is doing a slow fade, nah.
Wait, okay, but 2008 was at KG, right?
KG and Ray.
Okay, I can't remember if Ray was there or not. Okay. Okay. All right, yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. But yeah, that's some time ago.
Some time ago. And when we come back with Monica, we are going to dive deep into her New York Knicks, and John is going to give me that organ. We're going to pay some bills right now. The Back here on The Good Word, Monica McNutt joining us. Y'all hear that organ? It is the New York Knicks theme music at Madison Square Garden. Look, Monica, with that win last night, fourth in the East, tied with Orlando for third, the Magic owned the tiebreaker, can get to as high as two, can drop to as low as five. It's such a weird, topsy-turvy situation for the Knicks. Julius Randle out for the rest of the season with shoulder surgery. It felt like that was the way that things were trending. Like Chris Haynes, former colleague here at Yahoo Sports, had a story where he talked to Julius and he said, you know, Julius went through some workouts and was trying to, you know, ramp it up and test it and re-aggravated it. Now he's going to surgery. But Monica, I feel like they're better equipped to handle a Julius Randle absence. A, you got Mitchell Robinson coming back. You got OG Anunoby coming back. And you don't have to worry about that delicate playoff dance of how much usage do you want Julius Randle to have in a postseason compared to Jalen Brunson and some of the other guys who are more sure-handed with the ball. Maybe less variance, I guess I should say, as far as making plays. Do you see it similarly?
Yeah, definitely. This team, frankly, without Julius Randle, has to play a different brand of basketball. And speaking of the Bucks and Knicks game the other night, both coaches were pretty insightful in terms of navigating this time of year. But one thing that Doc Rivers said that I think is so true is he talked about this point of the year, even getting guys back, it can be disruptive. Because there's a way that you have come to play in their absence, and you got a very short runway to figure out how to get everybody back on the same page and then roll into a playoff series. Counterpoint to that, well, not counterpoint, but also in lockstep with that, I asked Tibbs, I'm like, Tibbs, describe this time of year for an average person. I was like, does it feel like a never-ending Thursday? Like, what does it feel like? Because I don't think that fans sometimes get all that goes into finishing a season. And he's like, first of all, I don't know what day it is. Like, I just don't know what day it is. But then he talked about how important it is to understand, you know, the pros of resting guys versus the cons of resting guys, how you want your rotations to look. And he's like, in 99, when the Knicks were an 8 seed and won 8 out of 10, they were revved up and playing great basketball and end up knocking off a 1 seed. So he's like, it's so much that goes into it at this point of the year. And that's neither one of these teams necessarily trying to play the seeding game, because that's right. Just fraught, right? Like, that's just a bad idea.
Right.
And so I think for the Knicks, getting Mitchell Robinson back, it's the irony. Is irony the right word? That he was the first guy back, really, compared to OG, and now we know that Julius is out. Getting Mitchell Robinson back has been huge. But even in that, like, the way Isaiah Hartenstein has emerged for this team and has emerged even more so in the last 2 weeks, really since that West Coast road trip where they went 3-1, as somebody that is also looking at the basket instead of just trying to make a pass, has really helped them. And then when it comes to OG Anunoby, last night he's guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, his versatility is up there with the best in the league as a defender. He's shooting the ball with confidence, because when he first came back, it looked like he was favoring that elbow. But to see him shooting the basketball with confidence, being willing to stick his hand in there in terms of defense and make some of those plays that are signature to who he is so important. And so for me, you continue in the vein of Jalen Brunson is just going to have to be ball dominant, and you trust him to make the right play. If Julius Randle was available, that obviously splits some of that responsibility from Jalen, because he's a guy that can also draw two on the initial action. But then it becomes, okay, well, what are the rotations from that? Because Julius is looking to score. Sometimes he's trying to score on two, and he's not always a make the crisp pass immediately when a double team comes guy. So, yeah, of course, he's very talented. I think he would help this team. But the past couple of seasons in the postseason, he hasn't been 100%. And that, you know, New York is tough. I don't know if people consider that when they talk about his playoff performances in the past. So in the big picture, great dude. Want to see him get healthy. Tough loss for the Knicks, but he got to do what he got to do.
Now, you brought up something, and I'm going to shift to asking Monica something that's not on the rundown here. How long was it before you figured out who Isaiah Hartenstein belonged to?
Bro, did Pat Beverly clip? I thought he was joking. We're like, I don't know where we were. We were going to dinner. I was with some Knicks folks. And I'm like, y'all see that click? Ha, 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 ha. And somebody was like, no, his dad's black for real. I was like, what?
His dad, so, His daddy. Look, did the haircut not give you? Did it not make sense
no,
when somebody said?
Because we got Travis Kelce, and like the haircut didn't give it away, and it's just not enough melanation. Apparently, he's considered bright skin though. Like I didn't. The curl pattern is not. I didn't know.
Bright skin is that a new sub?
We're going with bright skin. Yeah.
Okay.
Now I will say this, and I love all of our Knicks families, but if he was pulled up with a cyst on his arm, I might have been tipped off. But that's not the case. And I love him and his family. But like, so no, I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I missed it.
I think I knew it and then forgot about it. But it's like discovering something again for like the second time. Like when the click comes, oh, that's right. He is half and half. You know what I mean? I was like, the tattoos, the haircut. I get it now.
Right. It comes together. But initially, upon looking, I was like, okay, cool. He got black friends. Great. Like what?
And then now... I wonder if the playoffs will be the point that the people who like him because of other reasons, will they still like him when they discover that he's half and half? Like, that is going to be the true litmus test.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
Is that two Americas? John is known to cut stuff out of this podcast. if we... Like, luckily, I don't know if you heard last week, Monica, but when I went in on the Washington Grand Wizards, if they moved to Virginia...
How that was.
I was like, me and John were debating whether to keep that in. And I was like, they shouldn't get too upset about that. They shouldn't get too upset about this Isaiah Hartenstein thing. They'll be fine. Madison Square Garden in the playoffs will be really fun. That's what if they're in it for longer than a round. If it's just a round, them people going to be mad. If you're in it for two rounds, I think, I won't say gravy is the word, but I think people will look at it and say, all things considered, roster, Brunson, OG, no Randall, I think people will be reasonably satisfied.
I'm with you. I love the way that this team is playing. I even think off the bench you're starting to get a little bit more consistency from Bojan Bogdanovic, which is going to be beneficial.
Does Tibbs trust him yet? That's the question.
So I'm going to go in the last four games. He's like right on the cusp in the last four games of averaging 10, and he's shooting the ball better. I won't say well, but he's shooting the ball better. I think this is going to be a year where Tibbs is really going to have to look at matchups maybe more than he's accustomed to. Because last night he went back to Bogdanovic after McBride was the one that helped turn the tide in my mind. And I think that was about size, right? That was about size in this particular matchup. So I think he might be a little bit more keen to matchups with this team than maybe we've seen in the past, which I welcome.
Well, it's funny, not just the matchups, but the way that this new league is, I call it a new league now, because it feels like a new NBA, now that things have been officiated and adjudicated differently and a more physical brand of basketball has been welcomed in post All-Star break. I looked at two teams after the All-Star break and I said, this should benefit them more than anybody. I thought veteran teams and physical teams, Knicks and Heat. And you look at the defensive metrics, even though the wins losses were not the high watermark for the Knicks in March, but giving up a little bit under 100, that feels like where Tibbs would love to be. That feels like playoff style basketball, lower possessions, lower variance. We're not going to turn the ball over and we're not going to give you easier opportunities. Does it feel like they've adjusted to the rules better than maybe some other teams? And maybe that's why other teams are struggling and the Knicks are kind of maybe holding water right now.
Sometimes, I'm going to be honest. Sometimes, yes. I'm like, okay, great. They get it. And then other times, like yesterday, Dante DiVincenzo got popped three times trying to defend Damian Lillard coming off the screen. Now, and to your point, Lillard obviously is a veteran. But it was like, bro, if you don't move your hand, just try, like, block and trail as best you can and don't run into him. Stop trying to reach across because he's clearly just going up right into the screen. So sometimes, I think, I will say for the bigs for the Knicks, I think it is translated. Mitchell, Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Is he in shape yet?
I actually think Mitch is playing good ball. I know he worked on his body and he was mindful of his diet while he was navigating that foot thing. Yesterday, and in Chicago, actually, he's diving on the floor with guards, going after loose balls. What did he play? 19 minutes yesterday? So, like, they're not going to go full tilt just yet. But frankly, the emergence of Isaiah Hartenstein, he doesn't have to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so I do think that he's playing into shape. And I think the bigs in particular, Josh Hart definitely benefits from the new officiating, OG Anunoby, even Deuce. Like, he's not your most physical defender, but he's incredibly pesky. And so I don't know that he was always solid, I think, with or without the rules. I think, frankly, where they've had to adjust a little bit more is what the calls that they are getting, too.
I was going to say the Jalen Brunson element of this, because he plays such a physical brand of ball. He's left-handed. He leans with that shoulder. Is he going to get those calls on the offensive end that you would say, oh, yeah, he's earned those calls, A, as an all-star player, and then, B, you have to recalibrate your brain and say, yeah, is anybody getting these calls nowadays?
Yeah. And there was a stretch there where I think he was very frustrated when they, after the OKC game, he's having a long conversation with the officiating crew. And so there was like a 3-game stretch where I think it was becoming, frankly, a bit of a distraction for him. And he had to kind of rein it in. But I think he's getting back to himself now. But yeah, like, I'm cool with the way that the game has been officiated. The other day, Josh Hart getting ejected 34 seconds ago in the first quarter, to me, was ridiculous. I thought that should have been a flagrant one. I don't think that it was intentional. And you keep moving. But the officiating is
interesting. It's hard to judge intent. You know, I thought we'd taken intent out of flagrant calls.
Like, what are we doing? And that's, I think I would even have a little bit more room if Hart was a guy that had that type of reputation, but he doesn't. So, like, what are
we
doing?
He's a tough physical player, but you don't think of him as dirty. He's not dirty, dude.
Not at all. If anything, he's a little bit goofy and, like, lighthearted. So, like, but, like, no, intentional? No, I wouldn't put it there. I do think, though, we will feel this new officiating far more once we get to series, right? And teams are seeing one another a ton of times. So that'll be the real test.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Like, bring contentiousness back to, like, the one thing I will say that the women's game that they got right, if they don't like each other, they gonna tell you and they gonna show it. I love it. Mm-hmm. Look, unfortunately, it has spilled over to social media where the conversations get a wee bit on the toxic side. And I have to say, you know what? I'm gonna sit this one out and I'm gonna start texting Monica and some of my other friends on the side, because I'm not gonna say this stuff out loud. But when you guys give me the affirmations, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not looking at this with my third eye. Speaking of third eye, OG Anunoby missed all that time with the elbow, and the Knicks were rolling. Like, the numbers with Randall and Brunson and OG were just off the charts crazy. Mm-hmm. But just as a whole, I think the Knicks are 16-3 with OG playing in the 19 games that he's played. Is he still capable of being the ultimate connector? I felt like even with Julius there, he was like the ultimate connector as a secondary ball handler, as a shooter, as a do-it-all defender. Even without Randall there, I know it changes the dynamic a little bit. And I know his shot hasn't been there since he's been back in the small sample size. But do you think he's still capable of being the connector that he was during those first, I think, 14 or 15 games when all three of those got, when they were, I think they were 12-2 in the first 14 games that he was there?
Absolutely, he is capable. And it's because he makes, first of all, with this team, one is because of how he's able to defend, right? Like, you can't have a conversation about a Knicks and a Tom Thibodeau-led team without talking about defense first. And so he connects it on defense because he can guard multiple positions, he can switch, he can get to the glass, right? Offensively, he's content to space it in terms of starting in that corner or on the wing, but he also has a great knack for cutting. And the Knicks have developed this thing, probably since January I've started to really notice it. They do a really great job of passing in tight windows when it's Isaiah Hartenstein, OG Anunoby, and I'll throw Jalen Brunson in the mix of that. Josh Hart sometimes gets involved too. But Anunoby and Hartenstein in particular, both of them love the pass, both of them love the cut. It was just working in tight windows. And so Ananobi's reads off the ball make him a connector. And because he doesn't need the ball,
he
becomes even more of a connector. So there's a couple times, I think in Chicago, did he go up for a baseline dunk? I think so. And last night, I think he wanted to dunk and got contact at the rim. So it's just good to see him feeling good and being able to be out there and be aggressive and not hesitant at all.
Well, now that you say he doesn't need the ball, but I feel like, at least for the Knicks, because Brunson's usage is so high right now. Like you said, 32, He was at 27 last year, and 27 might have wound up just being like the ultimate sweet spot because it leaves some room for you to do more in the playoffs as opposed to us leaning on you like this to control so many possessions in the regular season, and then it's going to go to Luka territory in the playoffs. And that just feels like that's untenable for somebody his size. And I know we had a conversation, or the NBA has the conversation about, is he tall enough and da 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 da, also this type of stuff. But is this where OG should be initiating more offense to kind of take a little bit off of Jalen Brunson when the playoffs begin? Or do you like him better off the ball, connecting, being sort of like blood flowing in the offense just to keep a certain rhythm going when the offense slows down?
Personally, the only thing I want OG Anunoby initiating is a fast break. Like, right? Now, I actually prefer, on occasion, Hart and McBride bringing the ball up, and if Jalen's on the floor, he at least can start on the wing and get into the action. But to me, OG is so much better making the right read, whether that is to stay put, and the ball is going to come across to the court after some actions on one side, and they fling it across the court, and he's able to knock down that shot, pump fake, or blow by his defender, or he's able to cut just at the right time. Right. I think we're starting to see more of the two-man action between Hartenstein and Brunson. And literally, Isaiah and I have joked about this back and forth. I'm like, bro, you like to pass more or shoot? What you doing? He's like, I probably should be shooting more. Yes, sir. We need you to shoot a little bit more, right? But he, again, that chemistry between he and OG Anunoby is real. And so I don't really need that from OG Anunoby in terms of initiating the offense. Because again, like, top level on the scout and on the addition and what he brings is his versatility on defense. And so his assignments defensively are going to be taxing. So I don't really need him bringing the ball up.
Now, Monica, they got 4 games left. You're in Chicago. They'll play Chicago again on Tuesday, and then they'll play them again last game of the season on Sunday. At Chicago, at Boston, Brooklyn and Chicago at home, the last 4 games. Is there a, I won't say dream scenario, other than, you know, health and winning every game, is there a dream scenario as far as how they would seed themselves and who they would be matched up against that you would say, okay, this gives them the best possible route either to avoid Boston or basically just getting out of round one? Is it an Orlando matchup because of Orlando's youth and inexperience in a playoff setting? Like, how do you see that? Are you in playoff mode yet?
So, for whatever reason, the Knicks play really well against Cleveland. And I know quite a few things have to shake up for that matchup to come to fruition. But that's one that I think most Knicks fans would be cool to see. I think you absolutely want to avoid Philly. you absolutely want to avoid Philly, because I think Joel Embiid, and small tangent here, we talk about these guys and what they do on the court and their injuries and who they are. But I also think when we look at champions and guys that take it to the next level, there is a little correlation about what's happening in their personal life. And I think we are looking at the most mature version of Joel Embiid, having had this thing pulled away from him, having been so close so many times, navigating injuries, being able to be honest about what he's feeling. He's got a little boy now. He's married. Like, I just think that if Joel could get right, you don't want to see Philly. The Magic are interesting to me, Vinny, because I'm pretty sure one of those games, the trades were going down and the Knicks were all over the place. And the Magic owned the tiebreaker. But one thing that we have seen this season is that matchups with teams with length and athleticism for the Knicks have been tricky. Mm. And while the Magic are young, they got length and athleticism. So,
and they don't play stupid. You know what I mean? Like, we think of young teams as young teams playing stupid, and that's why you kind of – and I think Orlando's won 2 out of the 3 matchups. New York won the last one a few weeks ago, it's 2-1. But Orlando doesn't play stupid to where they'll get in the playoffs, and the moment will be the Ime Udoka line. The moment we get too big for us, so they just get scared. Thanks, coach.
Yeah.
Our playoff hopes are off now. Thanks, Ime. Sorry.
I mean, yeah, and like, Paolo's the real deal. He was an all-star. We don't have to tell you that. The Wagner boys, I can't just hear Shaq saying that in my head. they are sound in my mind. They're young, but they're sound. And so if that's what it is, I think I do not think that they are two to one better than the Knicks, right? I just think that that's going to be a taxing series. As you know, winning is hard. So as it would be with anything, my personal preference would probably have been to be Indiana, but I don't think that's going to shake out either.
Shoot, Indiana is dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight as far as the play-in. Like, it's the Eastern Conference, man. With the put it like this, if Boston doesn't get to the finals this year with relative health, like, it's going to be time to break all of that up. Like, I'm not saying it should be a cakewalk. I'm saying things are breaking right with the injuries and some of the dysfunction of some of the other teams and some other teams not performing up to expectations. That Boston should cakewalk if you believe all the things that we've seen about the Celtics this year. I don't know if they'll cakewalk to the finals. I think, Monica, they're going to have a tough road no matter where they go, honestly. Outside of the first round, I think they're going to run into a little bit of a struggle no matter how the second round jumps out just because of the variance in how they play. Like, I don't see a Boston cakewalk. I know everybody else does, Monica.
Well, define a cakewalk. What do you mean by cakewalk? Define a cakewalk.
I think people believe that they're easily going to get to June, like almost unchallenged in a way. And I don't see it that way. I see them having a strong 6.5 when you probably need 7.5 to win in the playoffs. And even though that 3-point shot is, they launch, they shoot, they make. Man, you have two bad games, you find yourself in a spot.
No, that's true. That's true.
That's all I mean.
I probably think Boston is cool until they get to the semis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, second round. Yeah. Second round is going to start getting tight.
Yeah, which though is the point of playoff basketball though, right? Like, and again, we talk about the nature of a series and what it brings out to you. I think, what's my guy? Joe Mazzulla has come into his own as a coach this year. But obviously series require difference from not just players, but also from coaches.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just looked at the coaching ladder in the East, I mean, Nick Nurse and Philly, if that's what ends up happening,
Look, I saw Nick Nurse going back and forth with Brett Brown in the playoff series. That has forever changed how I feel about him. No shade to Brett Brown, but that was not two of our brightest minds going all in 2019, okay? All right? And then he did a boxing one on Stephen Curry in the NBA Finals. Man, I don't care what, dog, we shouldn't be doing that. Like, we got to get to a different level. Like, basketball is supposed to be so much more sophisticated, Monica. This week, we go do boxing one? Nah. Mm-mm. And don't forget, we got that wizard in Miami. And they and John hates when I say this, because John's probably pulling his hair out right now, and John's bald-headed. John's pulling his hair out right now when I say I am not giving up on the Miami Heat until that body is cold. In the grave, like, it could rise up like the Undertaker. I promise you, I'm not giving up on the Miami Heat.
I think that we all are right to respect the Miami Heat, but I also ask the question, how many times can the Heat do Heat things? Like, I think we forget last year they was like DeMar DeRozan's baby girl screaming, right? Almost out, right? Like, they almost was out. You know what I'm saying? And Milwaukee is old, and Giannis wasn't right. And I have a ton of respect for the Heat, and I think everybody's right to look down the standings and see what they're doing. But can the Heat even be the Heat this year? Because even this year's team is a little different in terms of the makeup.
Monica, I'd just be wrong. How about this? I will just be wrong. I will be fine being wrong, because I am not going to be the person that says, oh yeah, the Heat are down 3-0. That's when it's time. Nope.
But listen, Monica, to be fair, I ain't mentioned them as a team that I would like to see in the first round if you're the Knicks either. So I got you. Like, you don't want no parts of that.
No parts of that. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is the great Monica McNutt. Monica has, like I said, Monica's on the Hall of Fame here, man. Y'all don't know how much I adore Monica with all the stuff that she has done. She is a trailblazer, and not just what she's doing with the Knicks, but being on camera. I don't know if y'all be seeing the outfits that Monica be out here rocking when she be on Get Up. It be every color of the rainbow. Like, she be like, Stephen A., what color you wearing today? You wearing lavender? Boom. I got lavender for that ass. All right, Monica. Monica. Yeah. Monica's bringing the color. She's bringing the flavor. I dig it. Y'all, I love fashion. So, you know, I'm the best dressed, like, I'm the best dressed non-millionaire covering the NBA right now. How about that?
Okay, fair enough. I love it. The classification, because it's levels, and that's real. That's important.
And if Monica is a millionaire, she ain't going to tell nobody.
I'm not yet, but it won't be an announcement. We're going to be real, real G's mover, silence like lasagna. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, stealth. We're going to be stealth about this. So, Monica, besides the Knicks, besides ESPN, anything else that you got going on? Because I feel like you got as many jobs as me.
Nah, that's about it for right now. Also keeping an eye on what's happening in women's basketball. We mentioned the title, but this WNBA season should be lots of fun as well with all the free agency moves and this new rookie class. So my hands are full trying to finish the stretch of this NBA regular season and ready for the playoffs.
Now, before we go, because you just brought something up and John's probably going to be like, damn, Vinny, can you finish this out? But no, when Caitlin enters the W, how do you see the transition going? Do you see it? Because I heard Diana Taurasi say it's going to be different when she gets there. And I'm like, I don't know if that's like, quote unquote, hateration, holleration, or if that's just competition.
It's
They're just
not.
Saying it's different.
Oh, my God. Vinny, I know. I guess people are all reacting to this. But like,
yes.
Diana Taurasi is literally one of the greatest competitors that sport has ever seen. Not just the WNBA. You don't think that as a competitor, you're like, welcome, rookie. Now I'm about to hang your ass. Like, what is the issue with that? I don't understand why everybody is like, DT came in Leland Clark. What? At the root of sport in a league, it is still competition. And competition is healthy and beautiful and can be done respectfully. Now, to answer your question, I think Caitlin Clark will still have the opportunity to put up numbers. I think she will be an all-rookie team member. I don't know if she will be the rookie of the year because I'm not sure that Indiana is ready to take that next step in terms of the combination of Boston, Caitlin, their last two draft picks, turning the tide in the win column just yet. Because historically, it is a veteran-led league. And I got to get a look at some of these teams like Seattle that have really rearranged and reconfigured in free agency this year. So there's going to be a curve. She's going to have more room to operate offensively, but she's going to be dogged by better defenders one-on-one. And, of course, on the defensive end, she's got to go and play defense. So I'm not sure what the scheme will be to protect her because nobody has talked about her as a defender. Like, and there's reason why.
See, I just said Monica. I just wanted Monica to get one last strong takeoff because I forgot it was in the rundown and I wanted to get to it. So I'm like, how do I set Monica up to set her off? And Monica, you never let me down. I appreciate you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Monica McNutt, ESPN, New York Knicks broadcast pre and post. You will hear her sometimes next to Mike Breen. Of course, she just said there is a plan and I love when there's plan. Monica, I really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Vinny.
Yes, sir. Yes. So thanks to producer John with the rundown and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes. Dan, he'll be back tomorrow for another episode of Divine Intervention. I'll be back on Wednesdays in New York City for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.